and those who rebuke him incline to agree. Shall good and prosperity find blessing see? As one who is kissed on the lips in God's sight is one who is giving of truth and of right. The wise words of Proverbs, chapter 24, verses 25 and 26, from the version of Yours Truly, 2004, our daily scripture for today, little children. In the Trojan War article from 2015, today, in chapter 9, having completed paragraph 5, actually, yesterday, which says 944 plus 71 equals 1015 BCE, which is computed thus to be year 1 of Susen II, as computed from the death of Osorkon I in 944 BCE. That's been established by our B4 chronology, and it continues in the Time Will Tell chronology and the Quilt Work Patch chronology, all of which are part of our Blessed Genealogy. We come to chapter 9, paragraph 6, with year 1 Ramesses II, 1315 BCE, determined by Sothic alignment alone, well, actually, it was, yeah, we did determine it that way, depending on the value of the Arcus Visionis for the star Sothis, also called the dog star, from which we get the phrase dog days of summer, the fact that it was in July when this star typically rose. Heliacally, that means with the sun at dawn. In Egypt is when the star rose, because that's when they were viewing it. I mean, it was the Egyptians who were doing it. They were the ones who were so interested in this star, Star Sothis, also called Sirius, the dog star. But we can determine that year 1 of Ramesses II from the Sothic alignment, because there was a Sothic rising during the reign of his father, Seti I. So that's how we help to zero in on Ramesses II, year 1. But we say that we determine it there by Sothic alignment alone. That might be an exaggeration, because I think there's the Hittite chronology, there's the eclipse that occurred during the time of the Hittite king who preceded Ramesses II. All of these factors, many factors, went into the determination of 1315, which, part of which was the Hittite alignment. And not just the Hittite alignment with Ramesses, but the Hittite alignment with the pharaohs who came prior to Ramesses II, who were the pharaohs of the Amarna period, they having had interactions with the Hittites. But anyway, I mean, no, we know about these things to some extent or other, and that really defines the reign of Ramesses II, and the year 1 is 1315. Comes from really all of that, not just from Sothic alignment. But you could determine it by Sothic alignment alone. I think that's the point I'm making there. And 200 years in the interim, if you knew the Arcus Visionis accurately, now, when I wrote this article, was I still believing that there was a Sothic rising during the reign of Ramesses II? I think that's what I was believing at the time, right? Yeah. Yeah, I that's right. When I wrote this article, I believed that Sothis rose in year 1 of Ramesses II, which we don't necessarily believe now. I came to a new understanding later. I mean, it still remains possible, though, that it could be the way it was written in this article, but we later changed the way we understood the reign of his father, so that his father didn't co-rule with Ramesses II. As we worked on the chronology more, But maybe we were conforming to some of the Egyptologists after this article, and maybe this article is actually still a good, you know, a good determination. So that's why it's important that we preserve this article as part of our repertoire, I guess, of articles. But there were 200 years after Ramesses the First, exactly, or, you know, it was lunar aligned, according to Krauss, as being 200 or 201, according to the lunar alignment determined by Krauss. We agreed with the lunar alignment of the relative chronology of Krauss, so that the difference in time we agreed with, the 200 years. And we thought, in our case, it turns out it is exactly 200 years, not 201. So it makes it very convenient in a way, very beautiful round number, 1315 minus 200 is 1115. And that's year one of Smendes. And the first six kings of Dynasty 21 in Africanus get 100 years. I've actually downloaded this book now by Fotheringham. So I don't have to go online to get this information. So the first six kings of Dynasty 21 are Smendes, Susen the First, Neferkeres, who's called Amenemnisu, also. Then Amenemope, called Amenophis here, and Osorkon the Elder, who's called Osokor, and then Simon, called Sinachis. Those are the first six, Smendes, Susen, Amenemnisu, Amenemope, Osorkon the Elder, and Simon, Osorkon the Elder being one pharaoh. And those six, right down to the beginning of Susen the Second, are what we're talking about here. But those six have exactly 100 years, according to Africanus. Is Africanus the person we believe? Yeah, we do believe Africanus, because he gives Susen the First 46 years in Manetho, in the Africanus version of Manetho. That's in the version of that was transmitted by Africanus, the historian Julius Africanus. He gives 46 years to Susen the First, and that's why we believe those first six add up to the right number, which is 100 years. What's 26 and 46? 72 and 4. 76 and 9, 85. And 6, 91, and 9, 100. The total is correct. So 1315 minus 200 minus 100 is 1015. That's year one of Susen the Second. That's the other way we can calculate, which we also did by adding 71 to 944, the first year of Susen the Second, for his rulership, 1015 BCE. So we've now finished. So we got the 1315 from our chronology, the Blessed Genealogy, that is, and from Mr. Huber, Peter Huber, both of which chronologies dated Ramesses II as year 1, 1315. We got the 200 years from Krauss, Rolf Krauss, and we got from Manetho the 100 years in the version of Julius Africanus, to arrive at 1015 here. Now 1015 plus 9 in chapter 9, paragraph 7 now, as we read on, 1015 plus 9 is 1024 BCE. So that this 9 years for Simon, or Sinachis as he's called, in Manetho, and both Julius Africanus and Eusebius both give 9 years for Simon. That's the co-rulership, 9 years. That's mentioned there, right? It's the time, so it's not death to death, which typically or very often Manetho does give death to death, but in this case it's not. There's some kind of misunderstanding in Manetho, and that's what causes as we've already seen, this 9 years of Sinachi's to be followed by 14 years on the list of Julius Africanus, which is incorrect, we think. Except that, yeah, because if it were only 14 years, then Sinachi's would have 17 or something like that years, 17 or 18 maybe even. I say 16 or I said 16 or 17 in the article, but it could be 17 or 18 even. But this is just, we don't really know how long Simon ruled exactly, but to make it add up with the death to death as well as co-rulerships, for them all to add up, this 14 works when we have the beginning of Shashak, his co-rulership, or Shoshank, as he's called, Sisonkosis here in the next dynasty, when his beginning is 993, and we add 14 to that, we get 1007, and then we add the 17 years of Simon to that. That's death to death, we believe, although we don't know about co-rulerships with his predecessor. You see, it can get complicated. All we know is it looks like we can get the right answer if we have 1007 and then 14 years after that to the beginning of the co-rulership in 993 of Shoshank the First, ruling with Susen the Second. So the 14 years can be explained as beginning in 1007, whereas the 35 years of Susen begins in 1015 and ends at the death of Susen in 980. So these numbers are both correct, 14 and 35, but they're giving us different things with regard to the either the rulership or the sole rule, or, you know, in the case of 14 years, it's apparently the sole rule from the death of Simon to the beginning of the co-rulership of Susen with Shoshank, and that's what the 14 years is. But this co-rulership of 9 years that occurred from the beginning of Simon in 1024 to the beginning of co-rulership with Susen the Second, that's what the 9 years is, because Simon didn't die until 1007, we just said, and 1015 is the year we're adding the 9 years to get 1024 for year one of Simon, because we think that's the 9 years of co-rulership, and that was elaborated and explained by Gerard Gertrude, a very noteworthy chronologer. And he's one of the very few people who understood that 9 year overlap. And it was difficult to learn about that because the pharaoh changes their name when they become king. And prior to being pharaoh, he had been the high priest. And he was called something else prior to his becoming pharaoh. But I think he had the same name, but a different numeral, according to the modern history. You know, he was like number two instead of number three, or number, you know, it was a different number. So he, even though his name was the same, I think he had a different number, and he became he was the same person, but he became relabeled when he became pharaoh in such a way that most people never would have understood this, the fact that he was the same person, and so they wouldn't have understood that there was a co-rulership here. Anyway, it was very well explained by Mr. Gertrude, and we've talked about it elsewhere. But this co-rulership of, it's not difficult to understand, but we're not going into that today in any detail. But that's the reason why this is so simple. I don't think everybody knows about it, even among Egyptologists, because there's so many different things in Egyptology that are worth studying. But anyway, we could take the time and go into it right now, but I think it's always better to come back to it later when we've had time to look at it again, just so we don't make mistakes. But it's very it's clear. But my memory, I just woke up too. I wake up, I'm groggy in the morning. It's not the time to try to do anything complicated. I do my best work at the very end of the day, just before I go to bed, but I like to get the video done early in the day, so I'm going to be groggy in the morning. I'm not going to be able to do as much at the hour in the morning, but I'll prepare for the next day. By the way, yesterday I found, downloaded, discovered a number of articles. How many were there, 11 or 12 or what? I'm trying to see here. How many is that? Almost made a mouse slip there. That would have been devastating. 11 articles. Okay. So yesterday I downloaded 11 new articles. I was looking at some of the original work of, early work of Nelson Gluck, who actually discovered these mines that he called Solomon's Mines, south of the Salt Sea in the region of the Jordan River, at the location near to Kerbet and Nahas. And Kerbet Hamra Iftan is very close to that. And I found a map, not from Mr. Gluck, but the maps that were in his book I couldn't find. They didn't appear in the downloaded copy of the book. But his maps were not easy to understand, I believe. But his books are important. He describes in detail how to find things, even without a map. So he gives great details in his book, but most people can't follow his logic, you know, and how he explains things. It takes a very faithful person to be able to use the work of Nelson Gluck to find these mines in Israel. You know, if you were to go there, you'd just find a bunch of ruins and in the middle of a desert, and you'd, if you went there, you would try to ask the locals what it was and what the name of the place was, and you'd be getting all kinds of different answers, probably. You'd have no clue of knowing where you were. So you need the map to tell you how to find anything. And Nelson Gluck, he must have had done a large amount of work, a huge amount of work, to find these places in the first place. So I downloaded his books, one of which is called, well, there's one, the one I quoted from earlier was Rivers in the Desert, but that's not the one I'm talking about today. It's The Other Side of the Jordan is one of his books, 1940. And I got one of the volumes of his book called Explorations in Eastern Palestine. I got volume 3. I think there are 4 volumes in that book. And the volume that I got was made available by Hathi Trust online for free. 1939 Explorations in Eastern Palestine. That's the one that talks about the Mines of Solomon. Although that's talked about also in the other book, The Other Side of the Jordan. But I mean, the one that gives the most information is the one they allowed to download, I believe, for the copper mines. But the copper mines, what I think happened, we were talking about this yesterday. Let's finish this paragraph first. But so we get 14 years before Shoshank, 993, Simon died in 1007, and Susen II acceded as sole ruler, right? Meaning Simon has maybe 17 or maybe even 18 years after year 1 before he dies, and he's got a doubly attested year 17. So we know he had at least 16 years, but he could have had more, right? He could have, if we didn't know anything, we might think he could have had 20 years or more. We just don't need to have that, because 17 years does it nicely. That's the end of paragraph 7 of chapter 9 in Trojan War. So we covered a few paragraphs because they were short today. But the thing I realized yesterday is this Hamra Iftan, it's called also Rujum, which just means, I think, mound. The mound, like Tel, you know, Tel Hazor, or the city of Hazor, was in a mound, you know, or, you know, Tel Rehov, or the city of Rehov, you know, it's just a mound. The word Tel means mound, and Rujum means mound, I think, and then Kerbet means ruin. So Kerbet Hamra Iftan is a town, the ruin of the town Hamra Iftan, which was near Kirbet en Nahas, which was the copper mine was Kirbet en Nahas. That was the major smelting operation. But they did smelting. At least this is what the experts are have been saying to us. Okay, we don't really have to be too made up in our minds. We can learn more. Some things are not wide open. Like people are taught. Well, and nowadays many people are taught anything can be true, but that just isn't the correct way of teaching things. It's not that anything can be true. But it's that we do need to be aware that we can modify and improve our understanding, right, as we learn more. But there's still basics, fundamentals that remain true. This idea that you can, I mean, it's possible to do all sorts of manipulations, but they're not fundamental, you know. So we want to find something that is in keeping with the fundamentals of the truth, which we're very blessed to know that we have the Bible, in trying to learn those, with regard to which, you know, we're very blessed. So, the Bible tells us many things that are fundamental, you know, they underlie everything else, they're fundamental principles. And, you know, and even the archaeology of the Bible is so brilliant, as Nelson Gluck was very happy to report, that he found so many sites of archaeological importance in Israel because of his usage of the scriptures themselves that told him where to find these things, because of the reliability of the scriptures. So when you know they're reliable, geographically reliable, then you also know the teachings about human relations are also good and reliable. But, you know, many of the teachings in Proverbs almost certainly came from Egypt. That's why, at least that's another reason why I'm so interested in them. It's not because of Egypt, but because of the wisdom in the scriptures. But Solomon had many wives who were Egyptian. And it's not surprising that there's a mention of, in one, at least in the case of one pharaoh, that there's a connection between the Proverbs of Solomon and the wisdom of Egypt. So maybe a lot of the Proverbs that Solomon had, he got from someone in Egypt, and through his wives or through the contact that he had, indirectly because of his wives who were Egyptian, maybe he got the Proverbs that way. So we shouldn't be completely closed off to the wisdom of the Egyptians. That's one thing. But we feel it. You know, I mean, there's something we feel deep down when something is, you know, for want of a better word, true. I mean, I think the word true is misused so much these days, because, you know, anything can be true as long as people think that they believe it, and therefore it's true, you know, that sort of thing. But, I mean, the traditional biblical truth that is based on wisdom, well, there's no such thing as human wisdom. I mean, not of any value, because, you know, the wisdom of man is foolishness to God, right? And the wisdom of God is foolishness to men. Right, but I mean, God's wisdom is not something that people gravitate to automatically, especially when they're in contact with corruption in the world. That's the problem. So, but it does feel right when you finally come to accept, or not. It's up to you whether you accept it. But when you do accept the Bible, it gives you a lot firmer foundation. It does feel right. And you you're not only more happy, more contented, but you're able to work very hard too. You're able to pursue the things you love, and it really gives you a lot of advantages. Unfortunately, there are many people who are not ready to, because of their own free will, you know, they're not ready to choose the Bible as their source of fundamental principles. But the Bible's been ingrained in us by our ancestors for many, many decades, most of us anyway. Many of us, I should say. Not most of us, but many of us, not perhaps in the Far East, where there's not been a biblical tradition for as long. But yeah, what's the other book? Well, yeah, there was that. So I've got these books by Nelson Gluck. I'm going to be looking at them. I looked at them already, but I downloaded some other things too. What was Mattingly's book or article? There's one by... There are articles that are also, there are articles that oppose the Bible. You know, they're just in opposition to the Bible. And we just, you know, there are so many articles that we just don't have time to look at all the articles. But the purpose of my research was to see whether I could find evidence for the Bible's truth. That was the purpose. So I'm not interested in finding contrary evidence. My search in writing these articles was to find evidence, if possible, that would validate what the Bible has told us. That's been my intent of doing the research. So I'm perfectly justified in ignoring all the contrary, although I don't ignore all of it, certainly. And for example, Israel Finkelstein, I'm very grateful for his work, because in some of his work, at least, he confirms our chronology, and you know, inadvertently, because he believes in a lower chronology, but he's inadvertently given us confirmation of the, it appears anyway, confirmation of the iron one to two boundary or transition, which he believes is quite a bit lower. But if you take the upper limit defined by his radiocarbon that he gave, the 965 plus or minus some number, like 965 plus or minus 35 or something, or 965 plus or minus 25, whatever it was, it gets us the 973 on the upper side, and he has his lower number that he takes from it on the lower side of it. But his chronology, he keeps wanting to go lower and lower. But, you know, it's good that it's very important that not everybody believes the same thing. That's very important. It's wrong to think that everyone should be forced to believe the same thing. There's strength in believing differently. In the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen R. Covey, you know, said, you know, something like his attitude when somebody disagreed was good. I'm glad we disagree. That was his attitude, because there was a lot of strength in having another opinion that was not the same as ours. You know, there's a lot of, he valued our differences, he said, you know, that it's important to value the differences between people. So we value the differences between sexes, for example. When we value the differences between sexes, then, you know, we can appreciate the other sex without having to be the same as them, right? Or as they. We don't have to be the same as they are. We don't, you know, to value the differences. We can value the differences. We don't have to be only valuing the similarities, you know. So that's really important as a concept. And well, we'll have to see in the Bible, what is the equivalent concept to that? But every principle that you can imagine that I've ever tried to find in the Bible, I found in the Bible. Every principle. So that one about valuing our differences, I can't think of it right now, but maybe there is one. I'll be looking for that in the Bible to see whether I can find something that equates to that in the Bible. But so we've gotten through chapter 9, paragraph 7 of Trojan War, the article, Quiltwork Patch, the chronology. And we found 1024 is year 1 of Simon, We've also talked about it as maybe the very end of the year 1025, very end of that year, or the beginning of 1024, could be the year one, beginning of the Pharaoh Simon. And the thing is, if you change it even just a little bit, everything else in our chronology would become worse. So everything is very well established as it fits our chronology. If you want to accept the genealogy, it will be well suited to explaining everything logically in a very understandable way, and that was not the original intent, of course. I mean, I didn't know the original intent about that. I knew I was just looking for it to see if I could find any true chronology, really, because all the chronology I looked at was wrong. Everybody's chronology, and you could see it was wrong because it wouldn't connect to the previous chronology from earlier dates. They wouldn't all connect down in a perfect sequence. And we saw the contradiction in the length of the generations, you know, that changed when you modified the chronology, so that the age of a father at the birth of his firstborn son suddenly got shorter because of the change in the chronology that was brought about by Edwin Thiel. So we know that, you know, that everything works beautifully when you keep it just so, in the way that we've tried to search for, and we've found a way of doing it. That's the way we call the blessed genealogy. I'm grateful to share it with you, but not everybody's going to be interested in it. I mean, we don't expect that. We value the differences in people. Look at this articles here by Ben Yosef, one of them. Howland wrote his PhD thesis in 2021, and it's very interesting because he referred to the books of Gluck, and that's how I got some of the references for the books of Nelson Gluck. This is Nelson Gluck, 1940. Look, we have a minute, maybe. We've got 30 seconds or something. The Other Side of the Jordan, Nelson Gluck. This is the book I downloaded. See, some of these are available for free. I'm not sure why this one would be. I don't know when Nelson Gluck died. It might be just barely in the public domain. But he talks about, on page 50, starts talking about the Mines of Solomon, and so on. That's it for today. I've got 20 seconds, maybe. King Solomon's Copper Mines. It's one of the chapters here. This is a reverse image. The colors are inverted for the purpose of making this video. But in the non-inverted colors, you can see these pictures. But they're not the highest quality either, because it's a poor reproduction. But still gives you an idea of what's going on. The Mines of Solomon. It's pretty powerful. When you believe the Bible, though, you've got a confirmation bias. You're always looking to confirm the Bible. That's it for today, August 9th, 2024, of the Common Era. The time is 20:19 Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching. This is Lib Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.